Welcome to Walking Between the Worlds with Al Mean. This hour, you will receive powerful revelations of a world where mystery and miracles are commonplace. Here's your host, Al Mean.
Understanding guilt and innocence. To understand the concepts of guilt and innocence, we must first understand the meaning of illusion. In August of 2006, the meaning of illusion changed as the cycles of the fall ended, and some roles of illusion became obsolete. What is illusion? And how can we identify those in our life who still choose to cling to illusion? I would now like to introduce Ruchir, a great master, and we will see a little later the purpose for which he has come to this continent of America. But I'm going to ask him to read to us from Khalil Gibran's book, The Prophet.
On crime and punishment. Then one of the judges of the city stood forth and said, "Speak to us of crime and punishment." And he answered, saying, "It is when your spirit goes wandering upon the wind that you, alone and unguarded, commit a wrong unto others, and therefore unto yourself. And for that wrong committed, must you knock and wait a while, unheeded at the gate of the blessed. Like the ocean is your God self, it remains forever undefiled. And like the ether, it lifts but the wings. Even like the sun is your God self. It knows not the ways of the mole, nor seeks it the holes of the serpent. But your God self does not dwell alone in your being. Much in you is still man, and much in you is not yet man, but a shapeless pygmy that walks asleep in the mist, searching for its own awakening. And of the man in you would I now speak, for it is he, and not your God self, nor the pygmy in the mist, that knows crime and the punishment of crime. Oftentimes have I heard you speak of one who commits a wrong, as though he were not one of you, but a stranger unto you, and an intruder upon your world. But I say that even as the holy and the righteous cannot rise beyond the highest which is in each one of you, so the wicked and the weak cannot fall lower than the lowest which is in you also. And as a single leaf turns not yellow, but with the silent knowledge of the whole tree, so the wrongdoer cannot do wrong without the hidden will of you all. Like a procession you walk together towards your God self. You are the way and the wayfarers. And when one of you falls down, he falls for those behind him, a caution against a stumbling stone. And he falls for those ahead of him, who though faster and sure of foot, yet remove not the stumbling stone. And this also, though the word lie heavy upon your hearts, the murdered is not unaccountable for his own murder, and the robbed is not blameless in being robbed. The righteous is not innocent of the deeds of the wicked, and the white-handed is not clean in the doings of the felon. Yea, the guilty is oftentimes the victim of the injured, and still more often, the condemned is the burden-bearer for the guiltless and unblamed. You cannot separate the just from the unjust and the good from the wicked, for they stand together before the face of the sun, even as the black thread and the white are woven together. And when the black thread breaks, the weaver shall look into the whole cloth, and he shall examine the loom also. If any of you would bring judgment to the unfaithful wife, let him also weigh the heart of her husband in scales, and measure his soul with measurements. And let him who would lash the offender look unto the spirit of the offended. And if any of you would punish in the name of righteousness and lay the axe unto the evil tree, let him see to its roots. And verily he will find the roots of the good and the bad, the fruitful and the fruitless, all entwined together in the silent heart of the earth. And you judges who would be just, what judgment pronounce you upon him, though honest in the flesh, yet is a thief in spirit? What penalty lay you upon him who slays in the flesh, yet is himself slain in the spirit? And how you prosecute him who in action is a deceiver and an oppressor, yet who is also aggrieved and outraged? And how shall you punish those whose remorse is already greater than their misdeeds? Is not remorse the justice which is administered by that very law which you would fain serve? Yet you cannot lay remorse upon the innocent, nor lift it from the heart of the guilty. Unbidden shall it call in the night, that men may wake and gaze upon themselves. And you who would understand justice, how shall you, unless you look upon all deeds in the fullness of light? Only then shall you know that the erect and the fallen are but one man standing in twilight between the night of his pygmy self and the day of his God self, and that the cornerstone of the temple is not higher than the lowest stone in its foundation.
What is impeccability? Impeccability is to the headhunter that he does the best with his life that he can. And for him, the highest wisdom is the taking of another's head. But for the master in the temple, it is that he does not harm even so much as a fly. Are both these standards part of impeccability? What is impeccability versus integrity? Integrity, as the word is generally used, refers to a standard of conduct that is universal and can be applied to everyone. Impeccability means you are acting upon the highest truth or perception available to you. If you are acting in impeccability, is the headhunter therefore more guilty than the master in the temple who steps on a fly? Because we are exploring unknown ways of living all that we are through our actions on a moment-by-moment basis, our perception and interpretation of truth, the way the purpose of the infinite should unfold, is developing accordingly. Today's level of perception is not yesterday's, and our impeccability will be based on the various levels of changing perception. Often we berate ourselves because of past actions we view as mistakes. This is one of the primary causes of guilt. Guilt causes us to want to avoid it through selective perception, which in turn creates internal dialogue and traps us in the mind. The guilt is especially strong if others suffered from our blindness. But everyone enters our lives at the exact right time to receive from us the gifts and the mirrors we bring to help them solve that portion of the mystery they contracted with the infinite to solve. On the other hand, to act unimpeccably is to be unintegrated, in that the perception does not match the action. This could stem from either deliberately acting contrary to what we know to be our highest choice, or in turn, not being truthful with ourselves about where the action originated. Shakespeare said, to thine own self be true, and it must needs follow as day follows the night, that thou canst not be false to another. Universal integrity, on the other hand, is supportive of indwelling life. It is the source of actions that do not warp the web of the interconnectedness of life. It is the ultimate standard by which the conduct of man can be measured, no matter what belief systems or creeds he espouses. It is the highest form of honor a human being can live by. It leaves no karma and excludes none from its benefit, for it holds the greater vision of the oneness of life. All benefit equally from the actions of one who walks in universal integrity. One who walks in impeccability, living always his or her highest truth, must progress rapidly in unfolding their personal awareness. The perception of such a person increases as the horizon forever recedes. At first, occasional flashes of universal integrity might occur, but eventually, it becomes a way of life, for impeccability has to lead to the impersonal life, where the greater good is always the first consideration, until finally the ego is stilled and God consciousness is reached.
In this, the fourth book, The Ring of Truth, which chronicles Almeen's journey, she tells of the promise and the potential inherent in the resurgence of the feminine principle, increasingly felt in all aspects of current human experience. The operation of new laws governing the cosmos are explained together with the reasons for their creation. We are introduced to Mother, the primal creative energy that pervades every aspect of existence. We learn of her love and her laws and how to incorporate them into every thought and act. We are given samples of her divine language, its meaning, and its power. Mother's great gift to humanity, the healing power of Elvaspana, is revealed. This new approach to dissolving disease of mind, spirit, and body replaces previously existing methodologies. Application of its techniques removes old barriers of physically oriented existence and opens a broad pathway to a life of joy and fulfillment. Discover Mother and the Ring of Truth, as well as all of Almeen's books, CDs, lectures, workshops, or magazine by logging on to www.spiritualjourneys.com.
You've been walking between the worlds with Almeen. To learn more about Almeen and the mystical keys of life, log on now to www.spiritualjourneys.com.
But what is karma? When we examine the four building blocks of the infinite and its creation, time, space, energy, matter, they can be imagined as a river. The banks and shape of the river are space. The movement of the water is time. The force of the water is energy. And the water itself would be matter. The river is the unfolding purpose of the infinite. The one certainty is that it will move. If there is an obstacle, the river will either flow around it or increase its force until it breaks through. As life spirals forward, it carries unresolved mysteries, unexplored insights, with it until we turn them into light. These unyielded insights are karma. individual insights, unresolved from previous lifetimes, are held as constrictions within the etheric, emotional, and sometimes physical bodies of man, obstructing the flow of energy from our higher bodies. Dharma, which is collective karma of a nation or planet, is held in the grid of the planet. Again, it resembles a constriction. These constrictions create new opportunities to explore the unresolved issues and gain the unyielded insights through experience. Even though we seem to be exploring our own issues in an autonomous way, the interconnectedness of life has us playing a larger role. We are like mountain climbers, connected by a rope, ascending a steep mountain. If one of us is weighted down with baggage, karma that is not dealt with, our ascent will be slower, and everyone around us will be impeded in their ability to progress. In tracking our karma, we need to look for recurring themes and knee-jerk reactions. What is most helpful is regression into past lives. The amazing pattern of selflessness we will find as we trace our interaction back through lifetimes with those with whom we have experienced the greatest intensity of emotions is able to remove the deepest grief. The answer to dissolving pain has always been perception. In this case, we will discover with what dedication we have volunteered to be a mirror for one another, and how committed we have always been to the evolution of awareness, that every act we have taken has had its source in divine love. We will now hear again from the Master Rogier as he reads to us from the Lebanese poet Khalil Gibran's book, The Prophet.
On laws. Then a lawyer said, "But what of our laws, Master?" And he answered, "You delight in laying down laws, yet you delight more in breaking them. Like children playing by the ocean, who build sand towers with constancy, and then destroy them with laughter. But while you build your sand towers, the ocean brings more sand to the shore. And when you destroy them, the ocean laughs with you. Verily, the ocean laughs always with the innocent. But what of those to whom life is an ocean, and man-made laws are not sand towers, but to whom life is a rock, and the law a chisel with which they would carve it in their own likeness? What of the cripple who hates dancers? What of the ox who loves his yoke, and deems the elk and deer of the forest stray and vagrant things? What of the old serpent who cannot shed his skin, and calls all others naked and shameless? And of him who comes early to the wedding feast, and when overfed and tired, goes his way, saying that all feasts are a violation, and all feasters lawbreakers? What shall I say of these, save that they too stand in the sunlight, but with their backs to the sun? They see only their shadows, and their shadows are their laws. And what is the sun to them but a caster of shadows? And what is it to acknowledge the laws but to stoop down and trace their shadows upon the earth? But you who walk facing the sun, what images drawn on the earth can hold you? You who travel with the wind, what weather vane shall direct your course? What man's law shall bind you if you break your yoke but upon no man's prison door? What laws shall you fear if you dance but stumble against no man's iron chains? And who is he that shall bring you judgment if you tear off your garment yet leave it in no man's path? People of Orphalese, you can muffle the drum and you can loosen the strings of the lyre, but who shall command the skylark not to sing?
Duty to laws, that which has bound man. But the first and foremost duty and responsibility we undertook to fulfill is that contract we made with the infinite at the dawn of creation as to what part of the mystery of beingness we will solve. As our higher selves design our experiences, this sacred task and duty is the determining factor for each and every life. Not even the smallest particle of energy or experience is wasted. All things exist to evolve awareness. Rage in past cycles of the fall was used to facilitate the stepping down of light into matter. Even the blind spots we have that create karmic consequences are used as mirrors, not only for us to see, but also for others to experience, mirrors of their destinies and contracts. For at times, we are like a candle in the sun that asks, "What am I?" And the sun replies, "You are light, my child." And the candle asks again, "But what is light?" How can we then answer the candle unless it also experiences darkness? Our contracts with the infinite, which we call our destinies, touch the destinies of others exactly the way pentagons touch each other to make a dodecahedron, like the surface of a soccer ball. There are usually five others that touch each person, lifetime after lifetime. For instance, Jane might have as her duty the solving of how suffering can cause the enhancement of learning versus the loss of consciousness. Peter might be studying how the gap of perception between a victim and a perpetrator can be bridged. They may find they are incarnating together, mirroring various roles for each other's lifetime. Our higher selves receive the big picture of why we are entering creation, our destinies. From our highest selves, our individuation with the creator, and know what we need to accomplish during our incarnations. The roles we are playing are designed to fulfill our contracts. To wish we had someone else's role is foolish beyond comprehension. If we look at it from this perspective, we fight so hard at times against the opposition of our lives when every minute detail was designed by ourselves to maximize our chances of gaining those insights necessary for our destiny. I ask you now, if every detail, to the smallest minutiae, has been designed by ourselves to evolve life.
1 minute.
Beloved ones, how can there be guilt? Is not all life then innocent? The misguided sense of duty that most people have is the result of believing the mirrors of life to be real. they give their alliances to belief systems that imprison man and bind progress in exchange for the feeling of belonging that temporarily assuages the pain of alienation from their inner divinity. When we live less than our highest truth, we also impede the growth of others in our soul family with whom we have been incarnating. When we accept the unacceptable or cover and compensate for the mistakes of others, this misguided sense of duty prevents them from growing, as well as ourselves. In asking where our highest duty lies, the answer will always be the same, with that which promotes the evolution of indwelling life. Whether painful or pleasurable, this criterion allows us to fulfill at all times our highest calling.
In this, the fourth book, The Ring of Truth, which chronicles Almaine's journey, she tells of the promise and the potential inherent in the resurgence of the feminine principle, increasingly felt in all aspects of current human experience. The operation of new laws governing the cosmos are explained together with the reasons for their creation. We are introduced to Mother, the primal creative energy that pervades every aspect of existence. We learn of her love and her laws and how to incorporate them into every thought and act. We are given samples of her divine language, its meaning, and its power. Mother's great gift to humanity, the healing power of Belvaspada, is revealed. This new approach to dissolving disease of mind, spirit, and body replaces previously existing methodologies. Application of its techniques removes old barriers of physically oriented existence and opens a broad pathway to a life of joy and fulfillment. Discover Mother and the Ring of Truth, as well as all of Almaine's books, CDs, lectures, workshops, or magazine by logging on to www.spiritualjourneys.com.
You've been walking between the worlds with Almaine. To learn more about Almaine and the mystical keys of life, log on now to www.spiritualjourneys.com.
Distorted perception yields distorted emotion. When emotion is distorted from experience that has not yielded its insights, it distorts current perception in turn. Therefore, a downward spiral occurs that darkens higher vision to such an extent that even innate impulses become twisted. Innate impulses, or the instinctual wisdom of man, receive their wisdom from the grid of the species. Each species has a geometric array of lines of light that gives it direction pertaining to the fulfillment of that species' destiny. Think of it as the guidance system that should kick in when an individual loses his way. In the seven directions, this part of the psyche is the direction of below. When an individual spirals downward in a vortex of confusion and illusion, the basic messages telling him how to be are also distorted. The basic instinct of a human being speaks in gentle whisperings of a far, far greater destiny than meets the eye. It prods man into the knowledge that even a seemingly insignificant act could be the hinge upon which destiny swings. Such an impulse, seen through distortion, could cause the person to seek empowerment through the use of black magic. Black magic uses what is called first ring magic for life-destructive purposes. First ring magic uses external techniques, whereas second ring magic is the manipulation of reality through internal technology and by the power of intent for the enhancement of all life. Black magic does not require the accumulation of personal power through perception. As a consequence, it does not have accompanying insight to guide its use. It is a left brain-oriented skill that can be acquired to some degree by anyone with a teacher. A small act can cause great damage. How great depends on the skill level. And so the feeling of empowerment to impact life is felt by the black magician. It is a distorted and an upside-down perception of the destiny of man. Any attempt to harm life or to exert our will upon the unfolding of destiny in this way distorts the web of life and creates karma for the practitioner. This brings more spells and curses directed back at the practitioner, further distorting this perception. A spell is, in many cases, a distorted cage of light placed around someone else. The less black magicians can see, the less able they are to change, until they are trapped in a web of their own making. Pain, striving to force them into change, becomes increasingly aggravated. To escape it, they move further and further into their minds, increasing their selective perception that prevents them from seeing how to reverse their downward spiral, reducing their ability to feel anything at all. They are then trapped, unable to receive guidance, while accumulating increasingly painful karma. The fate of black magicians and their downward spiral could as easily apply to any who commit inconceivably hostile acts against humanity and nature. Fight promoters find perpetrators of all kinds in various lifetimes that leave them shattered or in shock. It is very difficult to understand that which is not within. Rage has been a natural result of suppressed light. It served to break up decaying or stagnant patterns. Huge uncontrollable rage could well be the last attempt by a perpetrator to break free from the ever-thickening prison bars of his own making. As long as he can feel, he can at least know he is alive, and a faint glimmer of hope remains. But to the pure in heart, a wall of rage can be devastating. Why would we manifest such darkness in lives dedicated to reaching for the light? Because we can see from a higher perspective, and because we feel deep compassion for all life, we suffer their presence in our lives in order to gain understanding of what causes such a descent into darkness. The evolution of awareness requires certain experiences to explore certain portions of the infinite's being. If we gain those insights for others, their painful experiences are not wasted, and we gently and compassionately lift them off the treadmill. They now become free to more productively explore other portions of the mystery, should they choose, finally, to live self-examined lives. Karma is not punitive. the infinite mother of all life, the being who gave us life, never has been punitive. Compassionate mercy is the very nature of her being. It is merely that karma is a blind spot begging for resolution through insight-yielding experience. By gaining insights on behalf of those struggling with darkness, we assist in removing their karma through grace. We become a savior to others in the truest sense of the word. In exchange, our own light increases. For in doing this, we have left the cosmos in our debt, and it must repay us through increase. When we finally expand our vision to such a degree that we can see these souls for what they truly are, gratitude floods our hearts and can lift us into ascension. If such a role had to be played to produce certain insights, these beleaguered ones have assumed the role of joyless descension out of a belief in the purpose of the infinite. They have also done it, so we did not have to. Perhaps for many lifetimes, all we could see was the self-pity of our role as victim, and they had to repeat their roles as perpetrators, trusting that we would eventually learn the lessons and raise them up again. As the one expressing as the many, we were birthed from love. Even as we look into the darkest places within creation, all we ultimately find there is love. Beloved ones, guilt is part of the illusion. All there is innocence. Multiple times has the Infinite Mother, Creatress of all life, cleared karma from all beings, bestowing through grace the insights the experiences would have yielded. In the beginning of August 2007, yet again, time collapsed. The past no longer was. All black magic spells has been released from those that they have harmed. Time has ceased to be. There is no future, and there is no past. Just a series of successive moments. What does it matter that yesterday you were harmed by another? For today, too, they are innocent. What does it matter that the searing voice of your conscience whispers of deeds undone, of deeds that have harmed? You too are rebirthed each moment in innocence. We have today with us the Master Rogier. Long have the prophecies come that in September of 2007, that there will become a new order of white magic that cannot be misused, to be birthed upon the North American continent, that it would be birthed from the sacred order of the White Rose, who wields and guards the mysteries of the feminine pole of white magic, once again restored by the Holy Mother of all life. The Master Rogier has come to this continent as one of the Order of the White Rose from Ireland to America and Canada to birth here the magic order of the White Dove that will hold and guard the secrets of the masculine pole of white magic. Magic that can be done to heal and uplift. No longer can magic hurt or harm, for thus has the Mother decreed it.
In this, the fourth book, The Ring of Truth, which chronicles Almaine's journey, she tells of the promise and the potential inherent in the resurgence of the feminine principle, increasingly felt in all aspects of current human experience. The operation of new laws governing the cosmos are explained together with the reasons for their creation. We are introduced to Mother, the primal creative energy that pervades every aspect of existence. We learn of her love and her laws and how to incorporate them into every thought and act. We are given samples of her divine language, its meaning, and its power. Mother's great gift to humanity, the healing power of Belvaspada, is revealed. This new approach to dissolving disease of mind, spirit, and body replaces previously existing methodologies. Application of its techniques removes old barriers of physically oriented existence and opens a broad pathway to a life of joy and fulfillment. Discover Mother and the Ring of Truth, as well as all of Almaine's books, CDs, lectures, workshops, or magazine by logging on to www.spiritualjourneys.com.
You've been walking between the worlds with Almaine. To learn more about Almaine and the mystical keys of life, log on now to www.spiritualjourneys.com.
But our greatest judgment has not lain by the laws of the land thrust upon us. It has been judgment of the self. If we can understand that the only guilt there is failure to learn, that our actions itself have stemmed from innocence, for we are but a reflection of the infinite's face. Guilt, therefore, is the failure to learn from past experiences. Is there anything that plagues you with the sting of your conscience? It is not too late to extract from those experiences their highest insights, and even yet to turn them into innocence. But why did it have to be so painful? Many times throughout cycles of creation have we asked this question. Why did it have to be so painful? The Master Ruchir will now read to us from Khalil Gibran's The Prophet.
On joy and sorrow. Then a woman said, "Speak to us of joy and sorrow." And he answered, "Your joy is your sorrow unmasked, and the selfsame well from which your laughter rises was oftentimes filled with your tears. And how else can it be? The deeper that sorrow carves into your being, the more joy you can contain. Is not the cup that holds your wine the very cup that was burned in the potter's oven? And is not the lute that soothes your spirit the very wood that was hollowed with knives? When you are joyous, look deep into your heart, and you shall find it is only that which has given you sorrow that has given you joy. When you are sorrowful, look again into your heart, and you shall see that in truth you are weeping for that which has been your delight. Some of you say joy is greater than sorrow, and others say, nay, sorrow is the greater. But I say unto you, they are inseparable. Together they come, and when one sits alone with you at your board, remember that the other is asleep upon your bed. Verily, you are suspended like scales between your sorrow and your joy. Only when you are empty are you at standstill and balanced. When the treasure keeper lifts you to weigh his gold and his silver, needs must your joy or your sorrow rise or fall.
As we look back over our life, especially at those times when we had love disappointments, that we feel foolish or bereaved, or we feel somehow that we have been victimized, why is it that such guilt stings our very soul? For, as Emerson has pointed out in some of his essays that he has discussed this issue of guilt and innocence, he has commended us that we have indeed seen the greatness of others' lives, but has queried why such a stain lies upon our own errors. For it is in our own errors that our wisdom is born. Did we think we would know today what we do if we had not made those mistakes? Then which ones are the guilty ones? For all of them provided us with growth. Why, indeed, did the fall have to be so painful? The story of the fall changes with each ascension cycle. As we move higher and higher, the vistas change. The story of the fall is always a story of love. There is no mistake, for even that which seems as a mistake will, in fact, with a higher vision, be seen as perfection. In August of 2006, the Infinite Mother of all life declared that we had done what we had undertaken to do, that there was no more unknown portions of her being, that all illusion had successfully been solved. From that moment on, for those who travel through space, there no longer was blackness, but a deep purple, the essence of innocence and potential. But what does it mean that there was unknown portions of her being? When the mother birthed the first being, her beloved, the Father God, at that time, such great joy flooded her being at his presence in her life, at having a mate, a support, a joyous playmate, something through which she can pour her love, that her light and love exploded. The Father, God of all, had the capacity to deal with what light she had before. She made sure of that, for he was a reflection of that which is her light. A deep expression of the masculine components within the infinite. But she did not foresee that he in turn would birth such an explosion of light within her, that her joy would burst all boundaries. It flooded him with light and love, through which he had no capability of interpreting.
1 minute.
It is at this time that belief systems came about. for in trying to fence in a river of gushing love and light. He erected the first belief systems, the first fences of mind. The fall that ensued, beloved ones, has brought us maturity. It has brought us wisdom, carving into ourselves the hollows that can now hold our joy. For illusion is no more. All has been solved. Now the unknown is how much and in what ways we can express that which is. The joy, the passion, the innocence of experience, and the beauty of the mother's face.
We hope you have enjoyed today's show, Walking Between the Worlds with Al Mean.